are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again with you on this Friday edition of the show. We have a very special guest, Matt Barrows of The Athletic, joining me shortly. I do want to remind everyone you can subscribe to this podcast on all of your favorite podcast apps, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Tell a friend about the show. If they're not a 49ers fan, let them know their team is covered right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock, email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. I've had fun hearing from everybody post-Super Bowl. Some people upset. Some people don't even want to hear about the Super Bowl anymore. And I understand it. And we're in off-season mode now. So that's good news. It's all about team building now. How do you build toward the 2020 season and potentially a Super Bowl again in February of 2021? And judging by the comments from John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan at the press conference Thursday, they are fired up for that too. And they were upset. You could see it in their body language. You could see it in their eyes. You could see it in their faces. And John Lynch said as much, called it a gut punch. It's rough. It's difficult to lose a Super Bowl. So we'll talk with Matt about what to take away from that press conference and how the 49ers should begin attacking this roster in the offseason. My guest today is Mr. Matt Barrows. You can find all of his fine work at The Athletic, doing great things there. One of my favorite people to talk 49ers. And it's been a little while. I don't know if, Matt, we've even talked since the start of the season. It's been such a whirlwind season for me. All these wins. It seems like every time I talk to you, it's after a loss. So I guess we had to get back to that old situation where the 49ers lost the Super Bowl in very dramatic fashion, in very Kyle Shanahan fashion. But according to his press conference today, it seems like he doesn't have any regrets.
No regrets. Well, one regret, and that was a timeout. And you say, oh, okay. He's talking about the timeout. Yeah. He should have taken before halftime. But no, he's talking about after the bomb to Emmanuel Sanders went deep and it was 4th and 10, he thought that maybe he should have taken a timeout there just to allow the receivers to get their energy back because they had sprinted downfield so far, primarily Sanders, 32 years old, for the 4th and 10 play. But he decided that he should hold on to all three of them because if the fourth down play failed, then the 49ers would have to stop the Chiefs from running out the clock on their possession. So he held on to all three. But that was just about it. I mean, he did talk about the 3rd and 15 play when the 49ers were on defense and saying that could have been played well, that there should have been better cohesion, that perhaps Emmanuel Mosley should have stuck with Tyreek Hill on that. But other than that, I mean, the halftime timeout situation, the play calls in the second half, Kyle Shanahan said no regrets. And he has been, he has admitted to misgivings about the 28-3 play calls that he made in the Super Bowl he was in with the Falcons. So I feel like if there were plays that he truly regretted, he's such an honest, earnest guy that he would have said so, and he doesn't. So as far as Kyle Shanahan's concerned, everything was done pretty much according to plan and has no regrets, no second thoughts about those plays.
I want to get back to actually those comments, and because I do have some questions on how on maybe he's too close to the incident, because I remember 2017, I feel like he had a different tone right after the Super Bowl than he did years later with some time to reflect on it. But real quick, before we get back to that, I want to ask you about that deep post to Emmanuel Sanders that was missed. Were you in the press box? What did your view look like of that play as it unfolded? Did it look like, oh, they got it, or did it seem off at all to you from the start?
No, I thought they had it. I was in that end zone. So the press box sort of wraps around at Hard Rock Stadium. And so some of us were, on the corner, and some of us were actually kind of behind the end zone in the press box. And all of the action in that game seemed to occur on the other side of the field. So it was a terrible place to be, people on watching on television had a much better view of the game than I did, and most of the media did. But on that one, it was happening right in front of me, and Tim Kawakami was right next to me, and he said the same thing. This was a team, the 49ers, that whenever they've needed a bit of magic at a critical time in the game, whether it be Dre Greenlaw's hit or the Garoppolo to Kittle pass in New Orleans, or you know the third and 16s against the Rams, you know the pass to Pettis against the Steelers, et cetera, et cetera, they've gotten it. And this seemed like it was that. Garoppolo confidently stepped into that throw. We all kind of looked down and saw that, oh my gosh, Emmanuel Sanders has a couple of steps on the safeties here. And I thought for sure that ball was going to land in his hands and that the 49ers were back in business. This is going to be a continuation of the storybook that they had been writing all season, and it didn't. It didn't, and Sanders reacted demonstratively, you know, pounding his fist like, oh God, I wish that ball was a little bit closer. I would have gotten it and kind of lay in the end zone for a little bit too. And that's when you realize, oh my gosh, that was it. The magic's gone. They reached deep into the wizard's cap. There was nothing left in there. And that to me was like, okay, I had two stories going. We wanted to get a story up immediately after the game. I had a story for a win and I had a story for a loss. And after that ball hit the ground, I went to the loss one and started kind of filling in the details of the gaps that I had in that story. So, I remember that very well. It's sort of the most memorable moment. It's funny you should ask me about that, of the game for me, because it otherwise was kind of hard to follow from the press box.
More with Matt Barrows coming up, getting into that Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch presser from Thursday, and can the 49ers bring everybody back under the salary cap? We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. For Brian Peacock, too, I might add. You can go to calm.com/lockedon to get 40% off Calm Premium membership. LeBron James says getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes LeBron loves, like rain and leaves, and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedon. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedon. That's calm.com/lockedon. It's amazing how narrow, and the score ended up being 11 points, but it was really a 4-point game. It was 24-20. That was the game, and they tacked on that extra one when the 49ers were selling out, trying to not allow them to get a first down, try to get the ball back for another desperation heave, and then Damian Williams rattled off that 35-yard touchdown run. But it's the margin of victory is so narrow in the NFL, and there's that one play, the miss to Sanders. And by the way, on that one, I went back and watched the All-22 angle because I wanted to see if maybe he was held up, if the timing was thrown off, if maybe there was some defensive holding that didn't get called or something to hang up that play. And there was definitely nothing. It was clean, and Garoppolo saw it all the way. And I think maybe, if anything, Garoppolo got a little excited and just let it go early. Not so much that he missed where the spot was, but he threw it really early in the route. When I went back and watched, it was like, okay, yeah, maybe that's where it was. He just let it go early because it was a beautiful ball. It was a confident throw. The route was clean and he was wide open, man, and he just flat out missed it deep. But there were, you know, numerous penalties that fans went back and wanted to see on that 3rd-and-15 to Tyreek Hill, the 44-yarder by the Chiefs. There was the hold. A lot of people want that. And any number of calls, the offensive pass interference, there was the defensive pass interference on Moore. There's so many small things that could have really changed the outcome in this game. Obviously, the Chris Jones plays, those were the biggest plays in this football game, I think, where he batted those balls down in the fourth quarter. But I want to get back to those fourth quarter plays in the play call, because I wonder if Kyle Shanahan's convincing himself a little bit, or it's just been too soon and he just wants to shut down the talk and really slam the door on this season and be like, okay, we don't regret. I called the right plays and that's it. Because I went back and I watched each play in the fourth quarter, and it was pretty obvious that there were some plays that could have gone different. And I came away with the idea that even the perfect play call is not perfect unless it works, because there's so much that can go wrong on a pass play, and the right call can still be the wrong call if someone who's a really good football player just gets his paw up, or there's a drop, or there's so many things can happen on a pass play. And I was wondering if you felt convinced by Shanahan's comments that he thought that it was called correctly in the fourth quarter of that game on offense.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was, turning out like a lot of the games that the 49ers had this season. A lot of the games in December, and they won most of those. And that's why I think Shanahan was confident in what he was calling, because it had worked in the past. And I agree with you. I mean, there's an element of luck here that, you know, people, you know, the Chiefs got lucky. I didn't get lucky with their 44-yarder. That was a great play call. But, I mean, you know, something easily could have gone wrong there. If DeForest Buckner arrives a half step earlier, he hits Patrick Mahomes as he's throwing. If Jimmy Ward doesn't get turned around, that ball hangs in the air. I mean, it's not a dart by any stretch of the imagination to Tyreek Hill. My point being that there's an element of luck that winning teams have and losing teams don't. And the 49ers, like I said, you know, during my Magic Wizards hat comment, they just didn't have it over the last 6 minutes of that game. Chris Jones had a fantastic game, but those two bat downs, unless the Chiefs were just defensive geniuses and they knew that that was the passing lane that Garoppolo was going to be throwing in, and maybe they did. I haven't read anything about it, but Chris Jones was being blocked really well on both of those plays. He didn't get off the line of scrimmage. That's why he was in the passing lane. So it wasn't like he was beating the pants off of Mike Person and Ben Garland on those plays. He wasn't even past the line of scrimmage. And that's what, you know, ironically allowed him to bat down those balls. So, like I said, and you said, there's an element of luck, an element of being in the right place at the right time that the Chiefs had that the 49ers just simply did not.
I wonder if Chris Jones had seen those Kittle over the middle t-shirts and he's like, you know what? This is where the pass is going. I'm just going to try to block this passing lane. Thinking about the interior of the offensive line, trying to block someone like Chris Jones, and that's going to be difficult for anybody. Is the offensive line a place that you think the 49ers will address this offseason? Not saying that they're bad, because they've been fine on the offensive line and they have two really good tackles, but obviously Joe Staley, he answered the question, looks like he's coming back for 2020, but obviously he's not going to be here way down the road for the 49ers. So they have to start thinking about who's the future at left tackle. If that's Mike McGlinchey, then they have to think about who's the future at right tackle. They could use help on the interior. They're paying a lot of money to their center who has missed time. Is the interior offensive line or an offensive tackle, is that a place you go? If not, where do you think the 49ers would address first if they're looking for outside help, whether it's free agency or the draft?
Yeah, I don't think that, I mean, obviously there's not going to be a lot in the draft because they've got the 31st pick and they don't have many picks overall. So, I would think that draft-wise, you're looking at wide receiver with the first pick. It's such a loaded draft there. The 49ers have exactly three wide receivers of quality right now, and that's not even counting that Emmanuel Sanders is going to be a free agent next month. So this is a team that likes to dress six. They dress four for the Super Bowl. I mean, that tells you what Kyle Shanahan thinks of his depth there. So that to me is where the 49ers would go early in the draft. I don't know whether they try to cash in that first round pick for multiple second rounders or what, but I would think that that's what they're thinking there. I don't know if they can afford a great interior lineman. My thought would be, where does Daniel Brunskill play? He played so well, was such a reliable Johnny-on-the-spot guy, so unexpected. He was the big serendipity acquisition in 2019. He played games at guard and he played them well. So I wonder if there's a competition between Mike Person and Daniel Brunskill for right guard this season. And whether there's Justin School would be the swing tackle in that scenario. But I feel like Brunskill has earned the opportunity to at least compete for one of those starting spots. So that may be what they're thinking as far as, you know, a possible reshuffle of the interior of that line.
It was amazing the job that Daniel Brunskill did, and I was actually surprised that it was Justin School at left tackle and not Brunskill when Joe Staley got hurt. And I wonder if that's just because Brunskill's reps were all on the interior during the playoffs or something like that. But Brunskill played great at guard. He played great at tackle. And he was absolutely, I thought, I mean, Joe Staley, and I've talked about this multiple times on the podcast, Joe Staley was the one player, like, if he goes down, the 49ers are screwed. That is the one guy they can't afford to lose. They lost him, and it didn't really hurt all that bad. It was actually, I think, Jaquaski Tartt leaving the lineup hurt the 49ers the most during this season.
Yeah, that's a great call. I mean, you're right. And it wasn't just Staley that went down. McGlinchey was down, too. Lakin Tomlinson was the only offensive lineman that played all 16 games. Everyone else on that line, the week one starters, missed at least two. So that the fact that they were able to go 8-0 to start the season, you know, missing Staley for most of that time, missing McGlinchey for a big chunk, that's school, and that's Daniel Brunskill, and that's Kyle Shanahan, able to sort of wizard his way around those missing pieces. But, what a great thing to have going into 2020. All the younger guys that played and played well in 2019. So you've got that background, you've got that seasoning that some of these younger players already have, which should make for, you know, better competition, I would think, and a better team, ostensibly to start out the 2020 season.
You mentioned something there, Matt, about the wide receiver position that I want to dig into next. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. And I can attest to it. Going to spring training is awesome for any baseball fan. It's just a fun vacation, fun place to get away, great food. You'll rub elbows with baseball people and broadcasters, and it's just a really cool time. 10 stadiums, 15 Major League Baseball teams, 75-degree temperatures, all 10 stadiums in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles. Meet the players, get autographs before games, check out the upcoming prospects. One of my favorite things to do, go prospecting, find out who the next Major League stars are going to be. Amazing restaurants, tons of bars, craft breweries, of course, tons of outdoor adventures and hiking, biking. And you can even check off some must-see destinations from your bucket list, like the Grand Canyon. Bringing the kids along to spring training, Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. Family-friendly resorts and hotels offer plenty of fun for kids of all ages. Horseback rides to games, activities, wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. You mentioned wide receivers, and that position is so up in the air. You have Debo Samuel, who looks like he's locked in as a yep, just a really good young player, and I expect even more out of him next year because he admittedly, his head was spinning in training camp this year. So wide receivers, they take that second, third-year jump. I expect some development from him, and he's locked in as a starter, such a dynamic player after the catch. I think there will be more for him down the field next year. But then you have Emmanuel Sanders, who is a free agent and in his 30s. You have Dante Pettis, who seems like he's a candidate for potentially being traded or cut, and he's about as deep in the doghouse as you can get. And then you have Taylor and Hurd. Hurd is an odd case because he's shaped so much differently than the rest of the wide receivers on the roster, and he has a unique skill set, and he would seem to play into Kyle Shanahan's positionless football players just about everywhere he can find them, and Jalen Hurd would be one of those guys, but the track record is not great for especially wide receivers, but really any rookie that misses their entire rookie season, and now he's going to have a rookie season and those growing pains next year instead. So Don't know what to expect as far as a veteran wide receiver to go with those guys, what to expect from Trent Taylor coming back from his multiple surgeries, and Jalen Hurd. So wide receiver, I think, is a sneaky need, despite them spending multiple early picks over the last couple of years at that position. Do you have an inkling of what you think it might look like going into training camp at that position next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hope is that Trent Taylor is back in form by the start of training camp. I mean, he's still in a walking boot. He had five surgeries on that foot. I mean, it was just a nightmare scenario. What seems like a very simple, you know, screw and, inserted into the foot, and then it heals in 4 weeks. It got infected. It wasn't healing correctly. So there were five surgeries there, and he's still in the boot. This happened in August. So, I mean, the hope and the expectation, he seems to be out of the woods now, is that he's going to gradually, you know, get back on his feet and be ready, hopefully for, you know, OTAs and minicamp, but certainly for training camp. Jalen Hurd, I have no idea about. I haven't seen him in 3 months, and he didn't make the trip to the Super Bowl. He was the one guy I didn't see at all there. I saw Marquise Goodwin. He's not long for this world as far as the 49ers, but he was there. Jalen Hurd was not. I have no idea what's happening with him. And the 49ers haven't said, nor have Hurd's people. So there's a mystery element there. I don't know what's going on. So, like I said, I mean, there are two guys for sure, and that's Bourne and Deebo Samuel, and the rest is up in the air. I would think that Emmanuel Sanders, if there is a veteran in that mix, it would be him. My thought was that he would be an excellent pairing if you did use a first-round pick or an early second, whatever it may be, on a wide receiver, especially a speed wide receiver, somebody that Emmanuel Sanders could mentor over a year, possibly two, and then you would have that speed threat. You would have certainly the bulk that you would get from Deebo Samuel and possibly a Jalen Hurd. You would have the downfield element that would, you know, perhaps catch up to a ball thrown deep in the end zone in the Super Bowl, the scenario that failed the 49ers on Sunday.
John Lynch said Thursday that they don't have the cap situation where they can go to the grocery store and just take whatever they want off the shelves anymore. So they have to make some difficult decisions. Eric Armstead's a free agent. Jimmy Ward's a free agent. Do you see those guys walking at all? And I know it seems like Armstead and Lynch have said that there's some mutual, you know, mutually they want to be together. And Lynch wants Armstead back, and Armstead has even said he's okay with the franchise tag, which is very rare to hear a player say, and maybe because defensive ends make quite a bit if you get that tag slapped on you. But they have to make decisions about DeForest Buckner. Maybe there are some other positions they could find cap space and try to keep those guys, and Quan Alexander, or maybe even D Ford. That knee is just, I didn't think he looked like he was moving that well during the Super Bowl. If that's a chronic knee issue, they've got to start worrying about his future as well. The defensive side of the ball, how would you attack that if you were John Lynch? I mean, do you let Eric Armstead walk? Jimmy Ward would seem to be the one that you would bring back just because, you know, safeties just don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, he's probably the most affordable to bring back. But, I mean, my priority would be, you know, beyond the Kittle and the Buckner extensions. After that, my priority would be to see if I can keep Buckner I could keep Armstead for one more year. One more push to the Super Bowl with him there. And, you know, with the promise that, okay, we're not going to franchise you a second time. We'll go for it this year. We'll try to win a Super Bowl. And like you noted, it seemed that Armstead would be cool with that, which you're right. You never hear a player say, yeah, I wouldn't mind the franchise tag. Usually they pull a Robbie Gould and kick and scream with it. But that now seems plausible because of that. So that would be my first priority because everything emanates from that line backwards. And then it would be Jimmy Ward. And, boy, I mean, we just spent a long time talking about the needs at wide receiver. It's hard to create a list like that. But I think Jimmy Ward had the mistake on the Tyreek Evans, I mean, the Tyreek Hill catch, but you know, that was really it all season. I mean, there were very, very few busts back there. And even in the Super Bowl, otherwise, he played really, really well. The Chiefs are still talking about that, that the 49ers had taken away that deep ball for most of the game, and that was the one breakthrough moment that they have, and that's largely due to Ward and Jaquiski Tartt. So that's an important element there. I don't know. I mean, people have been asking, Dre Greenlaw played so well, and he's so cheap over the next 3 years because he was a fifth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that mean that you could save some money with Kwon Alexander? You know, Alexander didn't play well at all in the Super Bowl, and Dre Greenlaw did. So, I mean, does that tell you something? I don't know. I'm making stuff up here, but there are lots of ways that they can kind of skin that cat and make it all work, I would think.
Matt, you can come on the show and make stuff up anytime you want.
Yeah, right. I think they've already redone Kwon Alexander's deal, now that I think of it, and that was probably it. And he's such a valuable player. He won a team award. So I imagine he's back. The bottom line is that, you know, in this day and age, there are so many things that you can do with these contracts, convert them into bonuses, et cetera, that there would be a way to keep everybody together for 2020. Now, the question would be, would you be, you know, sacrificing 2021 and 2022, et cetera, if you did that? And that's basically what the 49ers have to ask themselves.
Yeah, it might be a situation where you have to go as hard up against the cap as you can without those extra draft picks, because there's not going to be a lot of ways for you to add players to the football team. And then with more draft picks later, which would make me believe they would probably try to trade down from 31 if they can at all, whether it's a future pick or more picks in the 2020 draft to try to then supplement their talent and maybe lose some guys the following year instead. But it sounds like they are excited for the 2020 season, and everyone's fired up to get back, and they expect to be back in the Super Bowl again next year.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the theme all week. I think people were, on Sunday after the game, people were either really angry, like Emmanuel Sanders, who stormed off the podium, or Richard Sherman, who had very curt, terse answers. Even Fred Warner, who's, you know, as amiable as it gets. I mean, he did not want to be there, and everything was short. And Joe Staley was morose, and et cetera, et cetera. By Wednesday, when they had the team meeting, the tenor had changed, and it was almost defiance that, you know, I shouldn't be feeling bad about this season. People shouldn't be, you know, making fun of us or yelling at us for you know, choking away a 20-10 lead, that we had a really great season and we should be proud. And that's what I think led to this feeling that, you know, we wish the season wasn't over. We wish we were playing on Sunday. We can't wait to get back after it. And, you know, I think that's great. I mean, I think all of these things lend themselves to the 49ers doing just fine in 2020. I don't want to say they're going back to the Super Bowl, because so many factors are in that. But it is a team that's built for the long haul. Just the way that Shanahan operates, the way he runs practices, they're not going to get ground down like the Jim Harbaugh teams did, I don't think. And they're a little bit younger than those teams were as well. So all those things are positives, I think, for the upcoming season.
Terse, morose, defiant. I can't wait for the Matt Barrows article at The Athletic that has an adjective for all 53 members of the 49ers.
They were mad and sad.
You pulled out some good ones there. Always a pleasure, Matt Barrows of The Athletic. You can find him on Twitter at Matt Barrows. Thank you very much, Matt.
All right. Anytime, Brian. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back Monday. A new feature here on the Locked On Podcast Network, the Ultimate Division Crossover. All the hosts from the NFC West, right here, Locked On 49ers.